The Square Dance, A Song of Summer, circa 1959. We could sense the music before we could hear it. Outside, even the leaves of the woods rustled with anticipation. They swayed and whispered as though they were already sashaying to the songs to come. Above them, the whole of the velvet starry night pulsed with excitement. Nothing, however, could surpass the flurry of activity inside our brightly lit log cabin as seven people whirled about its snug rooms, making frantic last-minute preparations for the weekly Wednesday evening square dance at Moody's Camp Lodge. In the middle of the living room, our mother, Woody, stood poised over an ironing board, expertly pressing the wrinkles out of my sister Nancy's and my full-circled cotton skirts. Hot wisps of steam hissed upward like cumulonimbus clouds, engulfing her red hair in the already static atmosphere. My sister and I battled for positions in front of the green metal dresser mirror as we combed and recombed our hairdos. I plucked at the bow of my ponytail as she continued to sweep up the ends of her ducktail to get every hair in place. At ages 9 and 12, that was about all we could do for beautification. Our brothers, David and Tom, ages 7 and 5, scurried about in the other small bedroom, tucking freshly pressed shirts into their Indian bead-belted corduroy pants. Two-year-old Mary wandered around contentedly, entertained by the commotion as she waited to be attired in her soon-to-be-pressed ruffled dress, white anklets, and black patent leather shoes. Our father was just finishing up with a quick reshave over the bathroom's tiny enamel sink, which was a good thing, as there was a line to get in. "Hurry up, Dad, I've got to go," I yelled. "Mom, is my skirt done yet?" asked Nancy. "I'm all ready." Suddenly, the first strains of a square dance song drifted over the woods and through the screens of our cabin windows. "It's starting, it's starting," we shouted in unison. "Hurry, it's time to go." Like a burst of firecrackers, we ricocheted around the cabin in all directions, searching madly for sweaters, flashlights, and stray shoes. "Can we go? Can we go?" we begged. "Yes," Woody said. "Take a flashlight and stay together. Dad and Mary and I will drive up shortly." Before the count of three, the four of us were out the door. Fearlessly, we headed into the dark night, surging up the rutted gravel driveway to the shortest route through the woods. Passing the three Moody's Camp guest cabins on the hill, we noticed that their lights were all out and quickened our pace. We were already late. Whoever held the flashlight led the way. The rest of us stumbled along, tripping over an occasional root or rock. We were too hurried to complain that the flashlight holder needed to share. And besides, we knew the wooded path by heart. The strains of the first dance pulled us onward like the entrancing music of the Pied Piper. As we scampered up the hill and around the corner of the lodge, the laughter and golden glow of lights drew us even closer to the square dance. The whole building was alive with radiant energy. Forgetting our usual shyness, we flung open the screen door and marched in. Oh, what happiness greeted us. Inside, people mingled from all around the lake. Lodge guests, private cabin owners, the camp help, local neighbors, and even visitors from other resorts in various stages of activities filled the small rooms. On this summer evening, some gathered on the sofas for a cozy chat, while children congregated in the porch's corner for a fast card game of spoons. But most filled the dining room, edging the dance floor in clustered chairs as they watched elated dancers swing through the paces of the Virginia reel. With our best manners on display, we searched for an empty hickory-backed chair from which to view the action. Quickly taking our places, we drank in the scene swirling around us. Foremost was the Frank Jolowitz Band, a three-piece combo usually consisting of an accordion, banjo, and drums. Although we children had heard the Chicago Symphony at Orchestra Hall, the square dance tunes could not have been finer. In our opinion, this was the music of angels. Fascinated, we watched the accordion player squeeze his instrument back and forth with a gentle sway while simultaneously playing melody on the keys. The banjo player strummed his strings and the drummer tap, 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 a steady swishing beat. But mostly it was the caller who mesmerized us all. Usually it was fishing guide Eddie Osling, who had miraculously metamorphosed into a debonair crooner. Now all a man left, now all a man right, sang out his rarely heard voice in a strong melodic diction. You had to pay close attention to his calls so as not to make a fool of yourself. With giddy smiles, dancers moved through the set at a fast clip pace. Eddie was definitely the man of the hour. The stage was set. Although watching the dancers was entertaining, our greatest need at the moment was to find a partner for ourselves. Anyone would do. We were not choosy. We were desperate. And since beggars can't be choosers, our dancing partners came in all ages, sizes, and sexes. Because most of the dances required switching partners midstream through the many do-si-dos, you never knew who you might end up with. Sometimes a brother suddenly became the best friend he was meant to be. Sometimes a dad took a gallant turn with his daughter. Sometimes an unknown resort guest, 30 years your senior, did the honors. Sometimes the handsome 17-year-old from down the shore and your shy 10-year-old self linked arms. Alas, you couldn't help but notice his brightening smile when the dance call switched him over to the pretty 16-year-old resort waitress. It mattered not, for eventually there was at least one dance where everyone was lucky enough to land the partner of his or her choice. And then satisfaction shone in their eyes, in the clasp of their hands, and in the easy, light flow of their steps. Those not dancing enjoyed the floor show while cheerfully entertaining each other. Young mothers holding sleepy babies shared fond visits. Fathers found old friends. Elderly eloquently held court. Children played cards, and lovers strolled off for a kiss. Woody and Pat Hines, the two young red-headed mothers of the crowd, sat side by side with their little daughters on their laps, looking as flushed and vibrant as a Renoir painting. Our father sought out some of the older, long-time returning guests with whom he always enjoyed a conversation. Fishing guide Tommy Seahutter and other resort workers mingled among the folks in close camaraderie, recounting the activities of the day. It mattered not what your day job was. In this small Northwoods community, all were equal, all were friends, and all danced with one another. Eventually, the band took a break, and hot, sweaty dancers stepped out into the cool, crisp night air. Smokers joined them, pulling out their cigarettes and exchanging fish stories between puffs, the glowing red butts gleaming in isolated darkness like the eyes of a wild animal. Within the lodge, men pooled together to tip back bottled beer. Ladies scooted their chairs over to chat as children scampered to the ice cream counter or into the office for a cold pop pulled icy wet from the slushy confines of the Coca-Cola cooler. Teenagers dealt a quick game of cards out on the breezy screen porch, cooling their amorous hearts, at least for the moment. Occasionally, the hot humid nights of summer forced the square dance outside to the tennis courts, where dancers swirled under the stars and the music rose with the moist mist. Revelers ringed the courts like they were at a Wimbledon match or sat at picnic tables to watch the action. Lit by the dim glow of torches, the dancing faces of friends moved in and out of the warm darkness as if they were woodland spirits playing in the moonlight. But on this cool night, the dance was inside, as usual, and when the band started tuning up again, guests returned faster than skittering crawdads on a sandy lake bottom. Eddie's suave voice beckoned dancers out on the floor yet again, and the night continued with renewed energy. Not surprisingly, the bunny hop and the hokey pokey brought a full crowd, young and all, to the floor. Other tunes ensued as dancers moved through the paces, segueing easily from one song to the next with hardly a moment to catch one's breath. And as dancers continuously pulled new partners to the floor, an eclectic mix was always in motion. Throughout the evening, highlights rained like stardust from the sky. Tommy, the fishing guide, swinging his young wife, Violet, around the room with dazzling finesse in a fast-stepping polka. Eddie calling out the intricate moves like a stage actor delivering his lines with snappy allure. Little children dancing with their parents. Bashful teenagers sharing a first dance. And most lovely of all, resort owners Dick and Lucille Seitz waltzing alone to three-count elegance in a heart-melting embrace. No Broadway stage could have delivered more mesmerizing moments. And then, suddenly, it all came to an end. when the band swung into the refrains of Irene, good night, Irene. Irene, good night. Good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. I'll see you in my dreams. You knew it was over. With panic in your heart, you searched for a ready partner, grabbed his or her hand, and frantically headed to the floor in a desperate effort to not miss the last dance. How could it have ended so soon? It seemed like it was only just getting started. But without a doubt, the evening was coming to a close. The band smoothly transitioned from Good Night, Irene into Good Night, Ladies. Good Night, Gentlemen. Good Night, Ladies. We hate to see you go. Merrily we roll along, roll along, roll along. Merrily we roll along over the bright blue sea. It was then that you knew you had to wait a whole week to dance again. Or worse, if your vacation was over, your heart ached with the knowledge that it would be a whole long year before you might be lucky enough to return and relish such magic. As the last note ended, a burst of laughter and clapping followed, hardly hiding the sorrowful sighs at the evening's closure. Friends bid each other fond farewells and headed home under starry skies. Those who came by boat maneuvered shadowy steps to the lake, and with the low, rumbling start of their motors, set off across the waters under the breathtaking Milky Way. Our family shuffled off to our station wagon, parked amid the cluster of other cars by the camp's log garage. As the seven of us piled in and snapped on our seatbelts, our suddenly sleepy selves watched quietly as our father swung the car down the narrow dirt road to our cabin. Only the sound of tires crunching on gravel filled the air as the headlights illuminated what seemed like an enchanted forest. Circling into our driveway past our leaning log garage, we noted with satisfaction that a lovely lime Luna moth and a cluster of other colorful ones clung to its back door. Resting on the warm wood from their own sprightly dance, they soaked up the heat from the overhead light like sunbathers on a dock. Tumbling out of the car, we lined up in the cabin's dark hallway, waiting for our father to unlock the door. Then with quick goodnights, we stripped off our clothes, fumbled for our pajamas, and stumbled into beds, leaving our once freshly ironed skirts and shirts in a heap upon the floor. Gradually, the forest became still. The last boat motored quieted on a distant shore, and only the lapping waves sounded their rhythmic song. Slowly, we began to drift off under their hypnotizing spell, as a reprise of square dance tunes swirled our hearts into exhausted, blissful sleep. In my dreams, I can still see and hear those lodge night parties, but most of all, I hear the music, its sweet, lyrical refrains echoing across the lake in suspended glory.